I'm so proud of my children, and it's good to have everybody see how much they've grown and everything. And Beverage Bob is here today, and he wasn't here last time. We have another special Bob with us. Is my father-in-law, Pam's dad, is with us, and that's really a special treat on Father's Day to have him. And even to think about some of the most exciting things that God has done related to our family in the last year and a half relates to my father-in-law, his growth, and it's a privilege to worship almost on a weekly basis with him now, which we had never done, you know, to date. And so that's very special to have you, Dad, with us today. Matt, why don't you stand up? This is my 17-year-old who's had to... And Tim, notice that Tim's a little taller. Matthew has had trouble with that for the last 2 years, but he's starting to get over it, you know. Matt's driving now. Very excellent pianist. Tim plays the electric guitar, wants to be the next Christian, Jimi Hendrix. And Tim is 15. And then Emily, where did Emily go? Is she? Oh, there she is, back here. Okay. This is Emily. And you'll get to hear, Emily is 13 now. I remember some of you remember holding her and babysitting her, and now she is the babysitter. And this sermon that you'll hear this morning, the opportunity that led to this and even sharing this, provided a special connection for her and I on Dads and Daughters this morning. So, and of course, Pam, you all can see. Just give you a quick update, too, related to what we're doing these days and NFI, and I get to work quite a bit with Ave now, and I have a whole new level of appreciation for her gifts and abilities. She has become a real integral part to NFI and our mission and what we do, and so it's good to see you, Joe. And I thought you were going golfing today. Is that... I prayed for it to rain. No, I didn't. So it's good to have both Joes here. And what's that? No, I haven't done that. But anyway, we are in Millville, New Jersey. That's kind of where we went after we left Huntington Valley. We've been there for the last 6 years. And we actually attend a church 10 minutes up the road from us, a PCA church. It's a little... in a podunk town, a very rural church. Matter of fact, it's the oldest PCA church in the country. And we have all the issues that go with that. You know, we have, instead of the band, got the organ on one side and the piano on the other, and we're now involved with the youth, and I'm trying to get to bring the youth, because that's one of the strategies for change in some of the older churches. The older people love it when their kids do it. You know what I mean? So these guys are preparing different things. Once a month we're bringing in to try to bring about a blended worship. I work there part-time with their men's ministry, occasional preaching. I'll be preaching there next week. So that's a part-time job. My main job is for NFI, and I wear a lot of different hats. The main hat that I wear right now is Director of Corrections Programming with our growing number of prisons across the country, and I've gotten to do some things with prison fellowship, but kind of a dual role now where I work with, you know, the kind of the secular Department of Corrections and then the Christian side of things as well. So I kind of like that blend, speaking to a secular audience and then getting to speak to the church still too. And then I've actually taken my tools back out again, and I'm working on Saturdays about, you know what this is about. About three Saturdays a month to put all three of my kids in a private Christian school. That's what it takes. And I've had opportunities to help start teaching Tim and Matt some of the trade. So God has worked that out. So we're very busy these days. Pam works at a medical facility, large doctor's facility, full-time, two doors down from where our kids go to school. So that's kind of convenient. So I've been praying for you, Anthony, for work, and I don't know, did you get something? Okay, keep praying for you, and I know Zach as well, I think he's looking for work. So anyway, I still get the hope requests, and I read it every week, and that helps me stay connected, so I appreciate that, Bev. very much. All right, what I wanted to do today, and I really want you to kind of look at a couple passages. One of them Dom read from that's fairly familiar to you, so you can maybe at least turn to Psalm 127 and keep your finger there. I just want to make a couple connections to that passage. But the other one is one you wouldn't hear a message normally from, and that is Job chapter 42. So they're the two places I would like you to turn this morning. I am a dad who makes mistakes every day, and I mean every day. I think every other day I have to apologize to somebody in my family. When you're in family relationships or any kind of relationship, it's kind of a mirror God puts before you of your own sin. You're constantly having to look in that mirror and have sanctification issues that God's working with you on, right? But I'm also incredibly blessed to have a career that very much is dovetailed with my greatest passion in life, which is being a dad. And that's an incredible privilege. And I've also, in that role as a father, in that career for the National Fatherhood Initiative, I've had opportunity to think deeply about this very simple, primitive thing that we're all connected to because we all had a dad, right? And yet that is so directly connected with the gospel, because how did God want us to relate to him as? You know, God is not male or female. God is spirit. But he commands us to call him and relate to him as our heavenly Father. So it's been a wonderful, you know, a lot of wonderful thoughts to think about how directly this issue is related to the gospel. I like to encourage reading, and if you'd like to learn more about the issue of father absence, fatherhood, which I came to believe, actually, Roland Warren gave me a book while I was here at Hope Community Church called Fatherless America, and it makes the case for why father absence is our most consequential and damaging social trend. I also would commend to you, if you'd like one that's a little more narrative, has a lot of stories in it, very funny and engaging, is Don Miller's To Own a Dragon. It's an excellent book. But I'm going to talk about dads and daughters today so that you can think about some particular things like teen pregnancy, even abortion in our land. A lot of these kind of issues up here, which we could list so many, domestic violence, our growing number of prisons, again, teen pregnancy, poverty, what else? What do you think of something? Drug and alcohol abuse. It's amazing when you look at all these things and you really study some of the facts and the research, every single one of them has a direct correlation to father absence. When dads are involved, responsible, and committed, these things get better. When dads abandon their family, abuse their family, aren't responsible, committed, all these things get worse. So it's our most consequential and damaging social trend. 24 million children growing up in our country without their biological father in the house. And you guys have a heart for the high school down here, and you can even see, you start spending time with kids, and you see the difference that a dad makes. This morning, I want to talk about that related, again, specifically with girls. So let's look at the Job passage first. And how some of my thoughts on this even evolved, even in preparation for this. My biggest challenge this year was I got invited to be the keynote speaker, which I've never been the keynote speaker. I've spoken a lot of places, but never as the keynote, and never where I was the guy who was raising money, okay? 500 people at this pregnancy care center banquet. And so in preparation for that, I read a book called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and that, again, gave me a unique connection this year with Emily and to think about some of those things. And I was also teaching through the men's group at my church, the book of Job. And as I came to the end of the book of Job, this is what I read, and we're going to look at Job's daughters and the description here. Let's just begin reading at verse 10 of chapter 42, the last chapter there. After Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord made him prosperous again and gave him twice as much as he had before. All his brothers and sisters and everyone who had known him before came and ate with him in his house. They comforted and consoled him over all the trouble the Lord had brought upon him, and each one gave him a piece of silver and a gold ring. The Lord blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the first. He had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 donkeys. And he also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. The first daughter he named Jemima, the second Keziah, and the third Karen Hapuk. Nowhere in all the land were there found women as beautiful as Job's daughters, and their father granted them an inheritance along with their brothers. This passage is from what's called or thought of a lot of times as the post-disaster period of Job's life. If you've ever felt like you've had it rough, read the book of Job. Okay, this guy really went through it. And you can get the story part right in chapter 1 and 2 and then 42. That's the rest of it's all poetry and dialogue and conversations. But he mentions these three daughters specifically in verses 13 through 15. The first one is Jemima of pancake syrup fame, right? That means turtle dove. And the dove, again, in their culture is a symbol of beauty and love. Keziah means cassia, which is an aromatic plant used in some perfumes. And then, please don't ever, you know, name your child this, okay? But Karen Hapuk, which means, are you ready for this? Horn of eyeshadow. And you wonder why this doesn't get preached on very often, you know? But keep that in your mind just for a second, and let's look at Psalm 127. I want to come right back here, but I want you to look over at what Dom had read in Psalm 127, which is a little more familiar to us. This talks a lot. This is a great Father's Day psalm, Psalm 127. It talks about viewing children as treasures and arrows given by God to make a difference in the world. The one verse that Tom mentioned in his prayer, unless the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it, right? Well, there's another focus on building here, and that's building a family in verses 3 to 5. And children are not our achievement, but they're God's gift. And so, just like, you know, a completed house or a guarded city in verse 1. Now, lest we have trouble with the fact that God says children are a wonderful thing, and I hope everybody here would agree. I know you have your days, but that you would agree that children are a wonderful thing. This is what Martin Luther says. He's known for his bluntness, okay, so I warn you. It says, the purpose of marriage is not pleasure and ease, but the procreation and education of children and the support of a family. People who do not like children are swine, dunces, and blockheads, not worthy to be called men and women, because they despise the blessing of God, the Creator and author of marriage. So this psalm concentrates particularly on the value of sons, you know, born. Look with me at verse, let me turn over there with you. Just look at one of the verses here. Verse 3, sons are a heritage from the Lord. Children, and this is where the daughters come in, which children, the word there in the Hebrew is literally fruit of the womb. Fruit of the womb, a reward from him. But then it talks a little bit more about the sons and the value that they have to the father. You know, you think about Bonanza is probably our closest connection to that culture, you know, with the sons, and as the father gets older, Lorne Green got older and older, right? Still looked good, but he got older and older, and the sons could surround him and still take care of him and still defend him in different ways. And again, that's part of the culture back here. I want to mention one thing here. In Israel, a daughter could only inherit the property of her father if there was no male heir. If you want to read about that later, that's in Numbers 27. Again, a daughter could only inherit the property of her father if there was no male heir. That's the special thing about Job when we look back here in Job chapter 42, because it spends a whole couple verses just on his daughters, and not only do they get an inheritance, but right along with the brothers. So it kind of shows Job's noble character, but we have special mention of the daughters. They're a specific indication at the end of Job's life of his blessing. Do you get that? Specific mention regarding the blessing of how Job's, the end of his life, is related to his daughters. That's what I want you to kind of focus on here as we continue. Now, I need to put this down. See, some things don't change. I always got dry and I always would go over there, but as I've grown up, I thought it's not as professional to walk over there and get a drink in the middle of your message, so I got it first. Now, I want to talk about fatherhood and daughters, and again, come to our culture quite a few years later. I want to give you some statistics that I learned in preparation for this opportunity, and even as I read the book, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and even prepared for this message. Just a few things first related to sexually transmitted diseases, or STDs, and teen pregnancy. Each year, there's approximately 15 million new sexually transmitted diseases. About one quarter of these are with teenagers. Teen girls specifically represent 51% of HIV cases reported among 13 to 19-year-olds. And it's almost a million girls under the age of 19 that become pregnant each year. Okay, almost a million now. And absent dads leave these girls vulnerable. Here's one particular study that really stood out to me, and it's a longitudinal study that we sometimes you talk about different statistics and things. Longitudinal studies are the most valuable because they're done over a long period of time. I mean, you can get statistics to say something when you look at things a short period, but it's when you have something that measures things over quite a few years, they mean the most. This was done out of the University of Pennsylvania, and they followed the children of teen mothers from birth in the 1960s to as old as 21 in 1987. The findings couldn't have been more dramatic. Kids with close relationships with a residential father, or long, residential means they live in the same home, okay, in the same residence. A residential father or a long-term stepfather simply did not follow the teenage mommy track. Just one specific thing here. One of four in this study of the 253 mostly black folks from Baltimore in the study had a baby before age 19. But not one. Okay? Not one who had a good relationship with a live-in father had a baby. A close relationship with a father not living in the home did not help. Indeed, those children were more likely to have children before 19 than those with little or no contact with their fathers. Isn't that interesting? People will do a lot of strange things when they're looking for love. Not just girls. On cable TV this week, a few nights, they had the story of the Jackson 5. You know, we haven't heard a lot about Michael for a while. Wacko Jacko, you know, all the different names that we have for him and the memories that come to our mind related to that. Again, another recent learning for me, I was reading an interview that he had where he said that when his parents started the Jackson 5, he was about 5 years old. And in the first rehearsal, something went wrong and he stopped and he said, "Daddy?" And his dad stopped him and said, "I am not your daddy, I am your manager." And Michael said, "I never forgot that." And several years ago, he was speaking in Oxford, England, to about 800 folks, university students, professors. And he was speaking on the foundation that he had formed called Help the Children. You know, a lot of jokes go out about that. But about 12 or 13 minutes into the talk, he started to weep profusely. And the audience started to get very uneasy. And finally, one guy got up and got him a box of tissues and brought it up to the King of Pop to help get his composure. And this is what he said. All I ever wanted in my life was a father's love. All I ever wanted was for my father to call and say, Michael, I love you. And he never has. And do you want to understand, you know, a lot of what Michael Jackson is? Again, this doesn't excuse it. Michael's an adult. He's responsible for his own behavior. But do you want to get a little bit of what's behind him? Look at the relationship with his father. Many people like Michael Jackson have never grown up with the privilege of knowing the great love of a father's heart. They've never been shown that deep love. Now, that's sad. Let me give you the flip side, some good things that happen when dads are involved. A few more statistics. The physical presence of a father in the home and the amount of physical nurturance, like hugging, kissing, okay, and physical involvement he has with his daughter delays the onset of puberty, which obviously contributes to a reduction in teen pregnancy, right? A daughter's self-esteem. A daughter's self-esteem is best predicted by her father's physical affection. Isn't that interesting? Here's another one from the Journal of American Medical Association. This is one that really stood out to me. Doting fathers help girls be more assertive, right? Isn't that one of the problems with not having girls who are appropriately assertive enough in a lot of these situations? Direct relationship to the father and his involvement. Another longitudinal study found that when a father is involved in his kids' day-to-day activities, they're more likely to confide in him and seek his emotional support. I was going through some old boxes, you know, just different things, thinking through in preparation for this opportunity in March, where I spoke to the large gathering of folks, you know, to, by the way, I had the money part, I've never been very good at asking for money. You can even ask Chick. Anytime we had to speak on giving or something, it's one of those ones you want to delegate to other people. And so I was wrestling with this. And one of the things my boss at NFI, he said, Greg, why don't you just tell this story? He said, just tell them that you've got some good news and some bad news. I said, okay. He said, just tell them. He said, the good news is we have all the money that we need. You know, we don't need any more money for this banquet. The bad news is it's all in your wallets. So that helped, you know, break the ice a little bit. But as I was looking through some old things that I have, you know, some kind of memorabilia, you know, some of you guys have drawers that become boxes of all this memorabilia, whether it's high school or drawings that your kids made, these kind of things. Here's something I came across from Emily. It was an American Girl booklet, something that they had given. And it was when she was 11, January 28th. And it was titled, I Love You, Dad. Okay, and it had little blanks where she could fill in some different things. You open the first page, it says, four reasons I love you. Being a good dad, talking to me about God is number two. Number three, being a good example. And four, loving me. It also shares some special memories that we had, different shows that we had watched. I'm embarrassed to say I used to watch Wonder Woman with my daughter. And then I got to I Dream of Jeannie, and we had some of these things. But this is the thing that really stood out to me the most. At the end it says, here is one thing you taught me that I will never forget. How to be a great Christian and grow in the Lord. And that meant so much to me. Because a dad is kind of three roles we have. You know, we're providers. We're nurturers. That's connecting with your kids heart to heart. Sometimes, you know, the old model, and many of us grew up with the dad who's the breadwinner. You know, that's important, the provider. But the nurturer, which sometimes just gets relegated to mom, that's connecting with your kids heart to heart. And dads need to do that too. But the last one is guide. Provider, nurturer, and guide. And that's where we pass on our values. That's where we pass on our faith to our kids. And grandfathers, grandmothers have a role in that as well, right? Christian family therapist John Trent shared a couple letters that were given to him by a third grade teacher. The letters were part of an assignment that the students had to complete. And so what I'm going to read to you is a little bit unedited for some spelling and grammar. The first one that I'll read to you is this. I'm going to read two of them to you. Dear Dad, I love it when you take me on dates. I like it when you play baseball with me, miniature golf with me, and watch movies with me. I really appreciate it. I like it when you tell jokes to me. I like it when you hug me and kiss me. Daddy, I love you. Now, just four seats away sat another little girl, and here's what her letter said. Dear Daddy, I love you so much. When you are going to come see me again? I miss you so much. I love it when you take me to the pool. When am I going to get to spend the night at your house? Have you ever seen my house? I want to see what your house looks like. Do you? When am I going to get to see you again? I love you, Daddy. One letter from a child whose father knows what it means to be there, to show his love. The other from a dad who, for whatever reason, has chosen not to be there. We get all kinds of things. Let me just read one more. This is from a girl named Tasha Miller from Arkansas. And she had sent an email into NFI. And a couple poems related to her journey. She wanted to go find her father to see him. She had all these fantasies in her mind of what that encounter might be like when she finally met him. And unfortunately, when she found him, for whatever reason, it's hard to even understand this, he just didn't want to be involved in her life. And so she wrote two poems, two very short poems. The first one's Questions, and then the second one, I Found You. I want to read these to you. Questions. All the questions I've always had about the man who could have been my dad. What does he look like? Do I look like him? Where do I come from? Will I ever find him? Am I missing just him or a whole family? Why doesn't anyone ever miss me? Is he looking for me? Does he know I'm here? The answer was no, my biggest fear. And the second one, I found you. When I finally found you, after all the clues, you gave me the devastating news. I had wasted my time. You didn't want me. There just wasn't room for me in your family. I couldn't believe it. How could it be? I wanted you. Why don't you want me? Do you know how it feels to grow up without a dad? Of course you don't. A father you always had. Now, this message is not about perfect families, you know. It's about God's love primarily. That's what we're talking about, showing the great love of the Father's heart. And one of the precious verses, again, in the Psalms is from Psalm 27, verse 10. It says, when my father and mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. And there's no greater father than God, right? Matter of fact, that's one of the ways that he, when Jesus was on earth, tried to help people get the gospel. There was not the severity of the breakdown of the family in the first century culture. But if you look in Matthew chapter 7, it talks about, you know, Jesus was speaking to the crowds and he says, if you then being evil know how to give good gifts to your kids, right? You know how to, if you being evil know how to give good gifts to your kids, how much more your heavenly Father? So he could take this earthly example of something that was working well, you know, involved responsible fathers. Hey, you being evil know how to give good gifts to your kids. How much greater is all that with your heavenly Father? Well, that has broken down severely in our culture. And so the issue of fatherlessness, of abandonment, of abuse, of being physically present and emotionally absent, you know, all those things stand in the way a lot of times of people getting the gospel, understanding the great love of the Father's heart. The cross of Christ is a monument for all of time to demonstrate God's love if we would ever forget. One thing I tell my congregation that I'm with now often and remind myself about often is each one of us here, every one of us, we're all a lot worse than we think we are. Mark, sorry to break that to you, but we're all a lot worse than we think we are, but we're also loved incredibly more than we could ever imagine. And that's what we find in the gospel. Chap Clark tells a story I love to illustrate some of this. He said he had a friend who had a three-year-old son, and this father had a routine. He would come home from work, he would come into the house, and he would go into the kitchen, open up the refrigerator, pour himself a glass of milk, get a couple cookies out of the cookie jar, then come back in, flop in his lounge chair, and turn on the evening news. And so one particular night, the father was coming home, and he was a little bit late, and he stopped at the door, you know, to see down the hallway a little bit, because something was a little off. He saw his three-year-old kind of running down the hallway. So he thought, I'm just going to see what's going on here. So he watched his three-year-old, went into the kitchen. The three-year-old, you know, climbed up on the counter, tried to get a couple cookies out. He knocked the cookie jar over. The crumbs were all over the floor. Then he climbed back down. He went into the refrigerator, opened it up, took out the carton of milk, you know, poured some in this glass. As he was getting the glass out, he broke one. But he poured it, and he was undaunted. He poured that in there. And then he came down the hall to his dad to give him this glass of milk and these cookies. Now, any other day, this three-year-old son might have been punished for all the rules that he had broken, you know? And the father might have stood there and said sternly, you know, you spilled the milk, you broke the cookies, you broke the glass, you made a big mess here. But this father said, all I could do is reach out my arms as my son came down the hall to me and hold him and say, son, thank you so much for that wonderful gift. Thank you so much for that wonderful gift. That is the heart of the Father. That's the heart that many of us have come to experience about God, and we forget about it. We forget the gospel all the time, and the Lord brings us back. But that's what people need to see. You know, Paul Tripp, who's also had a legacy here in his teaching, he talks about how you and I are instruments in the Redeemer's hands, right? To show the love of the Father. We are. We are his hands and his feet. That's how God does his will, does his work on earth. And sometimes we come to show the Father's heart to people who have been seriously wounded, to people who have experienced some of these wounds related to family of origin and fatherlessness and those kinds of things. I want to close with a couple things, and one is kind of fun and one is kind of serious. The fun one I want to show you for this reason is because sometimes with our plans, and I've done this before, is we get these complex plans of all these different things that we're going to do, and we get away from some of the simple things that God has created, like fatherhood. Fatherhood's a really simple kind of a thing. It's a real primitive type of a thing. It's real easy to show the love of the Father's heart in very simple ways. So I want, Jeremy's going to show us a couple kind of fun of our most recent PSAs, and for any of you who don't know much about National Fatherhood Initiative, that'll help connect you some to what we do. And I would encourage you to maybe look at, you go to www.fatherhood.org. We've got a real great website. You can get all kinds of things on that. But I want Jeremy for you to show a couple of these. And then as Jeremy's showing these couple of our new PSAs, public service announcements, there's a handout I'd like to be handed out, and I want to make a couple comments about that after we're done. I thought you would enjoy those. And can I have one of those handouts that are being handed out too, just so I can make mention of this? I don't particularly want to have, especially on Father's Day, have a long message or a long service, because I know many of you have plans afterwards, but I would like to send you home with something very practical. This is something we have in a resource called Double Duty Dads. It's related to mentoring and things, and this is a section that I printed out for you to specifically on tips for working with girls related to different ages. And let me just mention a couple of these and leave this with you to take home. Number two, on the first side here says, help her focus on inner beauty and strength of character. Let me just wait till everybody gets one here. See page 17, number two, okay? Help her focus on inner beauty and strength of character. What is on the inside, not the outside, is the most important part. She is probably already bombarded with images from the media that tell her to look, act, and dress a certain way. Help her to find and appreciate her internal value. Very important. And again, some of you are biological fathers or biological mothers, but every single one, especially those of us who are in God's church, we're all part of mothering and fathering. We're a family. You know, we really are. And this church has a great legacy related to children's programs and even children's outreach that I pray for the church that I'm at, Dom. So I do. I think often about things that you guys are doing so well. And I'm proud to have part of my legacy and journey connected with you guys in the past with that. A couple others. Four. All right, three. This is important for guys. Listen to her. Girls like and need to talk. Through this process, she feels appreciated, respected, and cared for. Though it might be tempting to give her lots of advice, I never do that, do I? Though it might be tempting to give her lots of advice, when she talks, remember that her primary need is for someone to listen to her. Four, treat her like a lady, no matter how old she is. Girls are often likely to choose a life partner who acts like her father or the father figures in her life, opening the door for her, helping her carry something heavy, helping her put on her jacket. These activities will help her learn how a gentleman is to treat her. Again, related to the whole teen pregnancy thing, God's designed it for a father to teach a young lady how a gentleman is supposed to treat her. That's who she's supposed to learn that from. So girls that don't have that experience are so vulnerable. You know what I mean? When they get, and they're maybe often seeking and looking for love from those individuals, and they're extremely vulnerable. Good cause for compassion. One more on the back, and you can read this, the rest of this yourself. let's see. Seven. Teach girls, especially growing girls, that eating is healthy and that they are beautiful just the way they are. Advertisers will spend billions to convince her she doesn't look right, so pay close attention if you think she's buying their message to lose weight and be thin. Okay? Take that home. Hopefully there's some things valuable for the girls that are in your life. The Lord says in the scripture that sometimes out of the mouth of babes, you know, we have that phrase where a little child will lead them. Sometimes the greatest and most powerful truths are spoken out of the mouth of children. I've talked to you a lot about the importance today of showing the great love of the Father's heart. And I'd like to let a young girl named Joanna, just a two-minute clip, close our service out today. And then, Steve, I don't know, will we have opportunity to have some folks if they want to pray, or I'll just close and... Okay, that sounds good. All right, let's have the lights down and listen very closely to Joanna.